ጀነትን ልንደርሳ ዘና ዘና ሰላካያ ሰክሲስ ምልካን ዘነተዝና ስዊልተኝማ ስዊልተኝ ሮቢስተም ስተፈፈፈ We heard how Krishna had described the process of gaining transcendental knowledge, and which was through the Guru Parampara. And he started explaining about himself, his transcendental nature, and he has a transcendental body, but yet he appears in this world in a transcendental, original form, original meaning. It is actually the original form. Bhagavatam describes aham eva sam eva gri nanyat yat sarasat param, that before anything else was in existence in the material realm, Krishna was in existence. And then everything comes from him, is maintained by him, and everything ultimately is comes into him again in dissolution. So this is quite an amazing, I mean, it is amazing, isn't it? That there's a form, a person, whom everything in existence comes from. I mean, it's amazing. It's even one step beyond amazing, it's inconceivable. It is not possible for a tiny soul such as ourselves to conceive of the Supreme Personality of Godhead accurately. And still he takes birth, and still he accepts mothers in this world, and fathers and friends. So he's so different from a jiva, even though he has a transcendental form, because he comes, one of the reasons is sambhavam yapma maya, in the sixth verse, that he comes by his own potency, by his own energy. He is not forced to take birth. So as soon as we say that he takes birth but is not forced to take birth, then what question comes?
Why does he come?
Why does he come? Because with ourselves, we take birth, but we're forced to take birth. So on one level, there's no question about asking why did we take birth, because we're forced to. We can say on one level that we're forced to take birth due to our material desires, but we want to experience the pleasures of material existence, thinking that they'll make us happy. But at another level, we take birth and we're told to go to this body and this place and have these qualities, and we have no choice. It's forced. There's no question of why. But because Krishna has no, he's the supreme, he's the lord of all his energies, and he comes by his own potency, then the question comes, why does he actually take birth? Why does he do it? Why does he appear in this world? So text 7 and 8, very famous verses, describe why Krishna comes. And text 9, also a very famous verse, will describe the results of knowing the truth, tattvataha, what about Krishna's birth, how extraordinary it is, and how it is so different from the birth, it's completely different from the birth of an ordinary soul, even though externally, superficially meaning on the surface, it appears to be the same because Krishna takes his birth in, no, it doesn't appear to be the same actually, because he takes his birth with a four-arm form and then he transfers himself into a two-arm form. He's fully decorated with ornaments, but then he transfers himself into a two-arm form at the request of Devaki Vasudeva. And then he looks quite ordinary on a particular level. But yet, although he may look like a human child, we would say his form is human-like, but actually our forms are God-like because we are made in his image, he isn't made in our image. So there's a term anthropomorphic, which means that man creates God in his image, that we imagine, because we are like this, we imagine Krishna is like similar to us. What's our argument against that? Huh? Okay, that's a statement, but what's the argument? This is what the modern psychologists, modern so many philosophers, not all, most psychologists obviously, but they say that man has a need, and they call it as, well, I can't remember the exact term, but it's retro to their childhood need to be fully dependent. In immaturity. So they say, therefore, we imagine a father figure in the form of a supreme, and there's actually no such thing. So what do we say when confronted with something like that? How would you answer that if someone said that to you?
Can we say that if God is complete, he can have, if humans, we can have a form. So it's also possible that God has a form.
Right, but what, it's possible that God has a form. But what they're basically saying, that there's no God, that we're just imagining, or psychologically imposing a human-like concept on some imaginary supreme being. But that argument will come into bear when we say, okay, then you say there's no God. Is there are we theists or atheists? If the person says that they're theists, but you're imagining a human-like form on him, then that argument comes, well, if he's complete, how could you say for certain he doesn't have a human-like form? That would be an imposing a limitation on him. But if they're atheists, and they say this whole thing is made up because man has a psychological need, a retrograde need for the dependence of thinking himself under the care of someone, full care and protection. Well, then we start going into the arguments, well then, okay, then you have to explain how all this got here. If you say there's no God, well, where do you see things just popping into existence out of, I mean, how often do you see that? You know, just, there's something didn't exist and then something exists coming from nothing. And then how do you explain life? And how do you explain order? And there's so many, how do you explain the details? You can't explain it by chance and natural selection. Just doesn't work.
And also, we live a life of dependency. We depend on so many sources.
Yeah, so that's their argument. So now you want to imagine that there's a supreme that you're dependent on, just like your little boy.
No, but you can take that and you can say that, therefore, want to accept our dependency and accept that we're also living in the creation dependent on a supreme source.
Well, if you want to think like that, if it makes you feel better, but it doesn't mean it's true, that's the argument.
But you could say that if you look at the very nature of our existence, it's a dependent existence. So why not take that to its fullest extent?
Why should you take it to its fullest? That doesn't mean that there is a God.
Well, if you look at the creation, it's a dependent creation. It's not an
it's a what?
It's a dependent creation. It's one thing is dependent on another.
But
so why not take that to its ultimate?
Well, it's eternal. Some philosophers say it's just eternally in the process of creation.
Mm.
Things that are eternal aren't created.
Mm.
It's actually the Mimamsakas even say that. It's eternal. And also the, yeah. But it comes down to an argument of theist or atheist mm-hmm. argument.
Definitely.
It will come. It comes down to that. So once that's the argument, then we know what it is.
Mm, work on the basis of establishing intelligent design.
Yeah, then you'd have to say that there's so many ways. There's so many ways, but and that's why Prabhupada so strongly attacked that life comes from matter, because it's not science, it's just another kind of faith.
Mm. Nice example.
Yeah, where's the proof?
Mm.
Do it and then talk. So in any case, Krishna in the seventh verse describes why he comes, seventh and eighth and the ninth, the potency of actually knowing these things is given. And also in the Katha Upanishad, and this comes up when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is speaking with his brother-in-law, Gopinathacharya. In one of the purports in that section of Madhya Leela, Prabhupada quotes this verse that begins Nayam Atma, that the realization of the Supreme, it actually only and simply comes by the mercy of God. You can't, if you don't see it, you don't see it. And you can't see it by your own power. It's actually mercy that gives you the ability to see it, the presence of Krishna. And if you, by Krishna's mercy, if you see it, you see it. To the degree he gives you mercy, and if Krishna withholds that mercy due to impiety, then you won't be able to see it no matter where you look. You'll see nothing because you're not gifted with the vision to see Krishna. And for a pure devotee, or an Uttama Bhagavata, he sees Krishna everywhere. Primanjana Charita Bhakti Chaniya. There is no place, the atheist, everywhere he looks, he sees no creator. And the theist, everywhere he looks, he sees Krishna. And neither of them have objective reality, actually. There's no such thing as objective reality, except from Krishna's point of view. He's the only one who sees reality objectively and subjectively too. But we don't see reality because we're too little to see all of reality. We see just a little portion. So no one can say authoritatively that there is no Supreme. So Krishna describes why he comes. Yada yada hidomasya glanir bhavati bharata adhutaram adhamasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Yada yada, whenever and wherever he, dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, whenever there is a manifestation of discrepancies in religion, adhutaram, wherever and whenever, adhutanam, and a predominance, adharmasya, of irreligion, tadatmanam, Sri Jamyaham, at that time, Sri Jam, I myself manifest myself. I just said myself, I manifest myself. Whenever there is a ghani of bhavati, there is a discrepancy in religion. Krishna says he comes whenever and wherever. So the Prabhupada's translation is, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So what question comes to your mind when you hear that? Yes. Well, I mean, there definitely appears to be a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion. So Krishna says, at that time I descend myself. So that's a legitimate question. Where is he? Yeah, exactly. And he's saying, here I am. Take me. As much as you like, you can be with me. Take me. And we say, later. I'm a little bit busy now. This is what Prabhupada said many times, that incarnates in the Hare Krishna mantra, in his name. He's always there in his name, but Kali Yuga, the name is especially prominent, because it's so easy to associate with Krishna through his name. There's no rules and regulations practically. What's the verse? From Sikshastakam, Nam Nama Kali Bhuda Niva Savajaktista Tapita Nimaita Smananena Kala. There's no time or place requirements, not like if the deity is there or the Supreme Lord comes as a different avatar, or he's performing a sacrifice or a ritual or meditation. These things are so difficult. So much qualification is required, so much opulence is required. But for the holy names, all we need is a mouth and an ear, and we can capture Krishna and be with him. So that's a very merciful incarnation of the Lord. So read from Prabhupada's purport. The word Sujami is significant here. Sujami cannot be used in the sense of creation, because according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body. So Sujami is a come. Sujami aham, at that time I manifest myself, as a proper translation. So it can't, it could also mean creation in a different context, but the Lord has just already said that his form is eternal. Therefore, Sujami means that the Lord manifests himself as he is. Although the Lord appears on schedule, namely at the end of the Dwapara Yuga in the 28th millennium of the 7th Manu in one day of Brahma, he has no obligation to adhere to such rules and regulations, because he's completely free to act in many ways at his will. See, that is what everyone is longing for, to be free to act as we want. And usually people think of that in terms of having enough financial power. So they work so hard their whole life, slave away for the purpose of gaining enough money so that they can retire, so that they can be free to do what they want finally. But when you're old, you're not free to be young again. It's a problem. But that's the usual mentality. Work hard and at the end of my life I'll be free to do what I want. But it never happens that we can never be free to do what we want, even if our body is relatively healthy. We can't do what we want. There's so many other obligations that bind us. It is actually, in this world, any attachments that we have, they restrict our freedom. So therefore, the freest persons in this world are the sadhus, especially when we consider, looking at it from this point of view. It's just the opposite of the way a materialistic person thinks. A materialistic person thinks, if I accumulate so much more, and I'll be free. And I won't have to wash my clothes or use a washing machine. I won't have to go to the market every day. I use a refrigerator to store the food and just go once a week. I won't have to sit down with a pen and paper and write. I will use a computer and just send an email. But all these things, rather than giving us time and giving us freedom, they entangle us so much in the complexities of life. Have you noticed that? Hema Krishnabhu? I've also noticed it. Have you noticed it? Actually?
Not fully realized.
Because, yeah. But the sadhu, just think of it, a sadhu, just a renounced person, he doesn't have any possessions, right? He can sleep anywhere. And of course in the Vedic culture there was a support for the sadhu, so they didn't need to, they can just go and knock on someone's door and then please, like this, the room was like they would accept whatever they can fit in their hands. They'd go to six houses. Whatever they could fit in their hands. No need for a plate. No need for utensils. No need for the bathe in the rivers. Just have simple clothes. Sleep. Sleep somewhere. Then the next day, just get up. Walk where they want to go. Didn't have to look for their car keys. Didn't have to put petrol in their car. Car wasn't breaking down. It was very simple because they weren't attached to many things, but they were attached to their freedom. They could go where they wanted to pursue their spiritual life. Yeah, the sadhus were free.
You don't need to keep money or credit cards.
Or credit cards, or mobile phones, or a second set of clothes, even. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he took sannyas and he left the house of Advaita Acharya, he went to Jagannath Puri, and four devotees went with him, Jagannanda Mukunda Datta, Nityananda Prabhu, and Damodar Pandit. And practically as soon as they left, the first thing he asked them, did any of you bring any supplies or extra clothes or anything? And he said, no, how could we do that without your order to do it? And he said, good. And they just went. Bathe in the river, hang the clothes up, have a gamsa. Put on the gumsha where your clothes are drying, your simple clothes are drying. Then sun, half hour, everything's dry, you put it on, you take the cloth you had around you, you rinse it, carry it with you, gone. What do you think? I think men especially, there's a part of them that would like to do that and nothing else. Just wander out into the forest. And say, anyway, whatever. But in Kali Yuga, if you like that, you get arrested and put in jail in 15 minutes probably. So Krishna has a purpose for coming. He's completely free. Isn't that incredible? He's completely free to do anything he wants. At any time. There's no restriction. Time and all the energies in existence serve him. He has Shakti, Satya Sankalpa, Icha Shakti. Just fulfill every desire even before he asks or desires it. He's given those shaktis independence.
So he doesn't have to say, get me this or get me that. They're independently serving. Their mood is service. So it's completely free, and yet he does specific things and likes specific things. So this makes Vrindavan even more wonderful, because Krishna could be anything he desires, certainly. Do anything he wants, associate with anyone he wants, and look what he chooses to do. Herd cows in the forest of Vrindavan and walk around without shoes, be surrounded by loving devotees, and play the flute, and dress in a peacock feather, with a peacock feather on his head and a yellow cloth, and to have very soft skin with reddish heels, eyes like lotus flowers, a cowherd village, steel butter, so inconceivable. The supreme, all-powerful, independent, unattached Lord steals butter. These things are inconceivable. And even more inconceivable, says Kunti Devi, is that when you get caught stealing and Mother Yasoda chastises you, you cry. And not imitating the activities of an ordinary child, but you cry because you're afraid of your mother. Just like you're afraid of disappointing your mother. Krishna is also, how is that possible? How is that possible? This is the wonder of Krishna's activities. It's possible because the love of the devotees of Krishna control him. Because Mother Yasoda wants to love him like a little boy. His consciousness molds to fit perfectly into being a little boy. Even though he's still always all-powerful. So how could he be acting like a little boy and still be unlimitedly powerful? Well, we certainly couldn't do it. But that doesn't mean that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can't do it. It's obviously difficult for us to know what it's like from the inside, being him. What it's like, how could he, what is it like when his mother is chastising him and he's crying? But it's so inconceivable, Kunti Devi and anyone who, even the great devotees who are not in Braja, when they perceive this, they're filled with wonder of the inconceivable pastimes of the Lord. But Mother Yasoda isn't filled with wonder, she's filled with ecstasy. Because she is the great lover of Krishna. Everything there in Braja is based on the great love of the residents of Vrindavan. So Krishna comes on schedule, freely, as Prabhupada was explaining in his purport. He explains, he appears by his own will whenever there is a predominance of irreligiosity and a disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. Prabhupada explains this point about that religion comes from the Shastra. It is not concocted or man-made. No one should be accepted as an avatara unless he is referred to by scriptures. It is not a fact that the Lord appears only on Indian soil. He can manifest himself anywhere and everywhere, and whenever he desires to appear. In each and every incarnation, he speaks as much about religion as can be understood by the particular people under their particular circumstances. But the mission is the same, to lead people to God consciousness and obedience to the principles of religion. Sometimes he descends personally, sometimes he sends his bona fide representative in the form of his son, a servant, or himself in some disguised form. So who is the disguised form? Chaitanya. Channa. Prabhupada is explaining about giving a perspective of the different religions in the world and why there are different incarnations or avatars, and why there are different things spoken. So he's explaining it, that the purpose is to lead everyone forward. But there's still different levels of religiosity principles. But what do you do when everyone thinks their level is the best? What's the standard? How do you judge higher and lower principles? It's like the first grade math student saying 1 and 1 is 2. And then the first year college student trying to explain X's and A's, adding A's and X's and B's and derivatives and exponential functions, and the first grade student says 1 and 1 is 2. And what you're talking about is
2 or 1.
He won't say that, but he's saying it doesn't make any sense to him. But that doesn't mean that there's not higher and lower math. So when he matures, he can understand. So what is the standard of higher and lower? In religion?
Knowledge of God.
Knowledge of God? Not exactly. I mean, certainly, but...
God.
Yeah, it's love. So if we accept that, and that's obvious, that everything has to be understood in relationship to relationship. Relationship with the Supreme, that all religion wants to reestablish a certain relationship with the Supreme. So, intimacy of relationship. And therefore, what makes one intimate in relationship is love. So, all paths that establish us in our relationship with the Supreme are wonderful. Because we're here in the material world having turned our back on Krishna. But yet there are higher and lower ones. So those that fill us with love and intimacy, that's considered the highest. So it's an interesting point, a way to categorize different religions. Some religions say that fear of God is the appropriate relationship, it's not that that's not true. That so much wrong goes on in this world because there's not enough deference and fear of the Supreme Lord and the consequences of what we do. So there's truth in that, but it's not the highest truth. Again, Mother Yasoda had no fear of Krishna, rather Krishna was fearful of her. So when one's love is so dominant that it overpowers the reverence, you know the word reverence? Yeah. For the Supreme Lord, that's very high. Of course we don't imitate, but yet we acknowledge how
how wonderful and special that is. So that's what Krishna consciousness teaches. But it goes through all the different stages too. Not taught officially, act unreverential in the name of love when one really doesn't have love. There shouldn't be any pretension. But yet, love for Krishna is the highest. What do you think? In any relationship, what's the highest?
Love.
Yeah. So, like your father has, he has a business, yes? So, he employs people in his business. So, they know they have to please him. Otherwise, they're out. So, they may have a respect for him and a relationship, and they may do what he says, but they always have to be a little afraid. They always, it must be just the relationship that you have with a boss. There always has to be some fear in there. And with the sons and the father, there's always some fear in there. But the father has other relationships too. He has friends, he has his wife, other relationships as well. So intimacy, loving intimacy is the standard.
So continuing why Krishna comes. So what was the first reason? When religion declines and religious practices, and irreligion comes up, he descends himself by his own potency, not force. And then pritranaya sadunam, to deliver the sadhus, and vinashaya, to annihilate the asadhus, the duskritam, the impious or the miscreants. Dharma sanstapanartaya, and to re-establish the dharma principles of religion. Sambhavami, yuge, in every millennium, every age, I appear again. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. But there are certain things that devotees can do to re-establish religion, but there are certain things that only Krishna can do. I'll read the last paragraph. The last two paragraphs. There are various kinds of avatars, such as Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Lila avatars, Saptavesha avatars, Manvantara avatars, and Yuga avatars, all appearing on schedule all over the universe. The Lord Krishna is the primeval Lord, the fountainhead of all avatars. Lord Sri Krishna descends for the specific purpose of mitigating the anxieties of the pure devotees who are very anxious to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, the prime purpose of Krishna's avatars is to satisfy his unalloyed devotees. Well, I've heard Prabhupada answer that he comes to save to deliver the pious, Pritranaya. So Pritranaya sadunam, to deliver the pious, to deliver the sadhus. But the sadhus are already saved. So what are they need deliverance? So Prabhupada said they come to deliver sadhus from their separation from him. They're missing him too much. So to deliver them from their feelings of separation, they come. Because they want to, that's how Prabhupada's explaining, they want to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. They're very anxious. That's what actually makes one a sadhu. to be anxious to see Krishna in that way. That's their only anxiety. We materialistic people, we have so many other anxieties. What are we anxious about? We're anxious about our health, we're anxious about our wealth, we're anxious about our family, we're anxious about our food, we're anxious about our plans. But the sadhus, you know, they're not on that level. They trust Krishna and they're detached. Their life is simple. They know that Krishna will take care of them. Their life is simple, their desires are simple and focused. Focused on, oh, when will I be with Krishna? How exalted. How can I please Krishna? The Lord says that He incarnates Himself in every millennium. This indicates that He incarnates also in the age of Kali. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the incarnation in the age of Kali is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna Vanam Tusha Krishna, who spread the worship of Krishna by Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the holy names, and spread Krishna consciousness throughout India. He predicted that this culture of Sankirtan would be broadcast all over the world, from town to town and village to village. Lord Chaitanya is the incarnation of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is described secretly, but not directly, in the confidential parts of the revealed scriptures, such as Upanishads, Mahabharata, and Bhagavatam. The devotees of Lord Krishna are very much attracted by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. This avatar of the Lord does not kill the miscreants, but delivers them by His causes mercy. And then finally, what is the result of actually understanding Krishna's position as the all-powerful, the Lord of all living entities, as the independent who comes when He wants, as He wants, for specific purposes? What is the result? Dharma karma chame tibhyam evam yo vetti tatvata. One who knows this in truth about Krishna's dharma, His birth, His karma, His activities, that they are all divine. Tapvadeham pranajanma, when He gives up this body, naiti mameti, He doesn't return again, but He comes to me. Naiti mameti, so as a mameti. He doesn't take birth again, He comes to me, O Arjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving his body, take his birth again in this material world, but he attains my eternal abode. So he's finished with material life, just knowing this, because naturally he'll surrender to Krishna too. Anyone who, this is from Prabhupada's purport, about two-thirds of the way. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or he says unto the Lord, "You are the Supreme, Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead," is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection, and this is confirmed in the following Vedic assertion. Tameva viditvati mujam meti nanyat panta vidite ayanaya. One can attain the perfect state of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. That's what this Svatara Upanishad. There is no alternative means than anyone. That anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance. And consequently he will not attain salvation, simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. So Prabhupada is speaking against those who misinterpret Krishna's position and don't understand it in truth, so they don't get the result that Krishna is promising here. And the next verse, which we'll read tomorrow, describes even more than not taking another birth again, but even more the process of attaining love for Krishna. Puta madbhava magata. Okay, thank you. So we'll leave that tomorrow. So, any questions or comments? Any questions? Did your brother call today?
Yeah, I was calling him last night.
Yeah.
Because it was a surprise for the parents, no one knew.
Really?
They were quite excited, yeah.
He just walked in?
Yeah, he just took a cab.
They didn't know he was coming?
No. No one knew.
Only you, but you didn't tell. When did they think he was coming?
Well, they didn't think he was going to go because he has only 2 week break.
Oh.
They thought they maybe meeting sometime in January or something next year. Yeah, it was quite exciting.
Yeah. At least they didn't have any heart attacks or anything either. Good. Any questions? Go on. Are you studying Bhagavad Gita?
Preparing for Bhakti Shastri.
Oh, nice. Radha Gopinath comes? Who comes?
Gaurangopri.
Yeah. He told me. He comes. Other devotees come?
Yeah, recently Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj came.
He was in
Melbourne.
Yeah, he came right there.
And drove him to Singapore. And other Gopinath who came, also this year. And Gauranga Prabhu came twice.
Huh? And how many temples are there in Malaysia now? 35 or something? 37?
They're not full-fledged temples. They're mostly centers. Small centers.
And each one has a Rath Yatra though?
Yeah.
That's the specialty of Malaysia, is Rath Yatra. We should consider ourselves a Perth, a branch of the Malaysia then. Yeah? What do you think of that idea?
Well,
secede from Australia and be part of Malaysia. And then maybe, yeah.
We don't have a lot of Radia trust in other parts, so we cannot.
We don't qualify.
On that category.
And things are pretty peaceful. And you participate in one of the Namahattas?
Actually, we run a hospital.
Oh, good.
Mainly for the university students.
Oh, nice. And many come?
Average about 5 to 6.
Every week or every 2 weeks?
Fridays.
Nice. Nice young men and ladies?
Mostly boys.
Yeah. Nice people? They must be nice people. Oh, nice. You like giving class?
I've been giving Sunday peace classes now.
Nice.
But you were born in Perth.
Malaysia. I studied here for 4 years.
Well, you took your birth here.
Spiritual birth.
Yeah. So therefore you're actually spiritually from Perth.
Got connected here.
Huh? No, no, my mercy. Mercy of Hare Krishna Prabhu and Lamahatta program. My blessing followed your blessing. You're staying in the house?
Sorry?
You're staying in the house, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did both of you get initiated?
Yeah.
Oh, and that's what's Nayi's name? And what's your name?
Kumar Krishna.
Last year in Pune Yatra. Yes. Okay. Anyway, we have class tomorrow, and then but next week we're going on Friday. Mataji and I go to Melbourne, so we won't have classes.
Oh, will you be back on the 19th?
21st.
Just thinking that we have non-yatra, thinking Friday. Speak on that day.
I won't be here. I need to go to Mataji.
Maybe see you around on the
that day. I'm quite busy at the moment, I'll have to see.
On a Sunday?
Yeah.
It's pretty intense here. So, the kind of work they're doing is quite intense.
It's only these couple of days when you just confirm. It's not yet.
It's nice.
Yeah, they're followed by.
Nice.
That's already a trial, a small one.
Maybe they have
to. Yeah, I will be around.
On that very day. What to do?
Maybe the next one will fall in order.
Huh?
The actual radiatra, the small radiatra we have in the temple. When Lord Jagannath, Balade Mansi Buddha, they already healed and everything. We take them out. In the temple, I think last year we did the same thing.
It was nice.
In the temple, quite a lot of people came.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was auspicious.
One time I was here for that.
I remember Sabuja Prabhu gave class as well. Mother Jacobini also gave class.
Yeah, it was nice. It was auspicious.
That's 2 weeks later from the night.
Okay. No, it's the right timing.
We have one question.
Yeah.
Here it's Krishna says that one who knows my transcendental nature, my appearance, disappearance, and my pastime, that itself, one will go back to God.
Will be liberated, yeah.
Liberated.
Yeah.
Or go back to God.
But
attain my eternal abode.
Yeah.
So it's more than just knowing Krishna was born and knowing that he's supreme. It has to be more.
You have to develop love. So that's why tattvata means in truth. So in truth means you give yourself to him. If you know his position in truth. But going back to Godhead also might mean my supreme abode and my attain Vaikuntha or something like that, not necessarily Vrindavan. It depends on the quality of love that you have.
Degree of surrender.
And the quality of the love. Yeah.
Whether one is in awe and reverence, or one is like love, with the other rasa. Is that what you mean?
Like that, yeah. But also Vrindavan has a special mood. The love has a special mood.
It's spontaneous love.
Yeah. And Vaikuntha has a different mood. But still, they're wonderful. But Vrindavan is something different. Not different, but...
And he's away from the spiritual world.
Huh? Yeah.
Spiritual
platform.
Platform.
So wonderful. Awakened relationship with the Supreme. How many times did Prabhupada go to Malaysia? At one time. He went because there was this lady, what was her name again? Something. Kamala Devi. She was going to give Prabhupada some land or something. But she was tricky.
Why is
she tricky? Huh?
Why do you say she's tricky?
She was tricky, I don't think she is. She's still alive, I don't think so. No, I think she had a plan. They would keep something about they had to build the temple in 5 years or something. Otherwise they wouldn't give it over. So something, it wasn't just please take this. There's some intrigue, I think. Yes? Yeah. Yeah. And then you'd build the temple and then we'd take it back, basically. There was something like that in there. But that somehow brought Prabhupada. And in 1974, we came through Malaysia, Sakthuni and myself, and we went to Penang. And there was, and Prabhupada had stayed, he was in Penang too. He had stayed at, I can't remember the man's name now, he stayed at his house, he had a hotel, something, this big man, a little bit big.
Indian.
Yeah. But he wasn't really a devotee.
Businessman.
Yeah, with other religious spiritual affiliations. Okay.